All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's going on? Welcome to this Friday edition of Canucks Conversation. It is brought to you by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and for your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps, the BZ4X will get you through. We are coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs. sales@wallcenter.com. Irfan Ghaffar with Harmon Dial, filling in for David Quadrelli, who, Harm, it's getting close to playoff time, and usually when it happens, players play through injuries, but unfortunately, David cannot.
Yeah, maintenance day. Sounds like it's day-to-day, maybe with baseball fever or something.
What is he, Brock Besser?
Maybe star of the show.
It's wild. The Vancouver Canucks sit 4 points up on the Edmonton Oilers. They have two more regulation wins than them. The Oilers have two games in hand. So needless to say, it is a very, very large matchup tomorrow night in Edmonton, Harm.
Yeah, it's not just the bragging rights and, you know, from an ego perspective, making sure you actually win that division. It's also about boosting your odds of getting Nashville in the first round, right? Which at this point, given the other possibilities in terms of LA and Vegas, and we just heard the news that Mark Stone is back practicing with them. So I don't think anybody...
See, that was a little grin on your face there.
Yeah, what a coincidence. He's going to be back for game one of the playoffs. Also last year, and we were kind of joking, we wondered if Vegas was trolling everybody by getting Mark Stone to practice exactly 8 days before, which is exactly when he practiced last year as well. Yep. in the lead up to the playoffs, 8 days before. But yeah, you want to play Nashville, I think, even though they're not going to be an easy out necessarily, but just stylistically, that they're not a defensive juggernaut the same way. They're more of a high-flying sort of rush offensive team. The Canucks are 3-0 against them in the season series. And yeah, they played them a lot early in the year, but it's also worth pointing out that when the Canucks played them in Nashville in December, the Preds had actually caught fire by that point. They had won 13 of the last 16 going into that matchup against the Canucks, and the Canucks just romped them. So it matters from that perspective as well. And we I'll be honest, I didn't think it would get to the point that this would be such a pivotal game in determining the division, because Edmonton's had a really difficult stretch, not only in terms of the quality of their opponents,
yep,
but the number of back-to-backs, and they're going to be playing tonight in Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see second leg. The Canucks are going to have a rest advantage from that perspective. Can they capitalize on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the game's in Edmonton, so Edmonton gets it. Are they in Edmonton or Arizona? It's in Edmonton, I believe. But anyways, whatever. The Oilers and the Arizona Coyotes tonight. Connor McDavid not playing, but could be a game-time decision for the Canucks. Interesting note, yesterday in practice, the Vancouver Canucks kind of changed up their lines a little bit. So as they're red, it's Hoglander, Pedersen, Mikheyev, Suter, Miller, Amon. Brock didn't practice, so that's just a placeholder. Joshua, Lindholm, Garland, PDG, Bluger, Lafferty, Vasily Podkolzin, odd man out once again.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how these potential lines look. I mean, number one, getting Suter and Miller Besser back together, it's interesting. You look at the underlying numbers, and you may not think that Suter's been that impactful playing in the top six, but the numbers for that line is a trio. At 5-on-5, they've dominated to the tune of a 67% share of scoring chances at 5-on-5 and have outscored opponents 14-3. Like, they've just pummeled them. And obviously, yeah, Brock and JT are doing the heavy lifting for that. They're driving play, creating chances. But Suter, his two-way intelligence, the little battles that he's able to win along the boards, his positioning, he's clearly making impact, because when you look at Besser and Miller's numbers when they're together, but with a winger beside Suter, they suddenly drop just below break even in controlling shot attempts and scoring chances. So I'm curious to see how they look together. And then the other aspect too is getting a chance to see Joshua Garland and Lindholm together, which really enhances the depth of your middle six, especially Lindholm coming back.
Yeah.
In that Arizona game, I thought that was one of his best games as a Vancouver Canuck. Joshua and Garland have both been rolling recently, especially Garland. So you also give Lindholm the chance to maybe get going offensively as well. You had three shots in that Arizona game. I like that possibility. The compromise, of course, is that you've got Ilya Mikheyev in a top six role next to Elias Pettersson, but you're going to have to make a compromise somewhere in your top nine. And I'm okay with that, especially because at least in the Vegas game a couple of games ago, Mikheyev was flying, looked quicker, and seemed to be driving play a little bit.
Pia Suter has four goals since January 24th, and three of them came in one game. So, look, I don't mind it. I get why they're doing it because of what you just mentioned, you know, the scoring chances and how good that line has been. But for me, once you get into the playoffs, you know, you're going to want to put your top guys, you're going to want to load up in lines. I'd like to see a situation where Elias Lindholm does get moved into the lineup, whether it's on the wing or whether he centers a line, and maybe you move Miller to the wing and maybe have Brock on that opposite wing as well. But, you know, it's up to Rick Tocchet and for debate. The big thing surrounding this team right now, as we head, and we're going to get into it with Kevin Woodley, who's going to join us in just about 10 minutes time, is the goaltending situation in Vancouver and the health of Thatcher Demko. Look, he's been out for a month. He's going to be activated, you know, at some point here. But how eager are you to see him to get between the pipes and make sure you get those games and that feel for a game before the playoffs start?
I think it's critical, and going to be curious to see what Kevin says about the importance of getting some game action in before the playoffs. But it's going to be an opportunity for him to shake off the rust a little bit. And that's why, from my perspective, it's not like Demko's going to be coming back and I'm going to be heavily critiquing his performance or the quality of how he plays. To me, it's just about getting the actual reps in, right? Yeah. Because sure, winning the division, it matters, but it's not the be-all end-all, right? At the end of the day, when the puck drops for the playoffs, nobody's going to care who won the division.
Well, I think you do if your opponent's different.
Yes. Yeah. From that perspective, yes. But
isn't that why you win your division?
Yes. And I'm kind of contradicting myself there a little bit. But the point is, like, and with Demko coming back, like, if he's a little bit shaky, like, that's okay. That's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And the bigger point I'm trying to make is, even if you do choke the division, which would suck, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But you get the prime version of Demko back ready for the playoffs, and he's looking like himself in the postseason, then like at that point, it's just, you're only looking forward from that standpoint. Yeah, right. So
I agree with you. I think if you choke away the division, it's a massive fault on the Canucks' fault for the season, on the Canucks season, because of the season that they've had. Look, the Oilers have been the best team since mid-November. It's no secret of that. But one more thing on Thatcher Demko. Frank Cervalli alluded to it a little bit when he joined Sid Harrison Price, where he basically said, you know, the workload of the players with under Rick Tocchet, and even especially the goaltending under Ian Clark, is the goalies get put through their paces during practice, during, ahead of practice and things like that. So maybe a day or two of rest is important for Demko. I think from the opinion of Rick Tocchet and as well as Ian Clark, they'd like to see Demko in game action earlier rather than later.
Yeah. And that's why I am so sort of interested to see, how do you manage the fact that you've got a big game against Edmonton, right? Yeah. And it's critical for the division, but at the same time, you want to make sure that he's 110%, right?
Yeah.
Because the playoffs are ultimately what matter more. It'll be an interesting balancing act there, and we'll see, because the other thing as far as the Edmonton matchup goes is if McDavid misses that game as well, then the equation sort of changes in the sense that from Vancouver's perspective, you need to then win your middle six matchups. And that, I think, to bring it back to the change in lines, I wonder if that's a reason why they have gone to Joshua Garland and Lindholm as a potential line, because in the Vegas game, Edmonton loaded up Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Zach Hyman, right?
Like, yep.
That's going to be the line that you have to slow down, and you're not going to be controlling last change, right? So I'm sure the Canucks will want to get the JT Miller line out against that top line of Edmonton's. But if you don't, then you at least have some insurance in the sense that you're not panicking if all of a sudden your third line is caught out against the Draisaitl line, because your third line is now reinforced and is built to actually defend well. Plus, on top of that, if they're missing McDavid, Edmonton's middle six all of a sudden is a lot weaker, right? According to Daily Faceoff, right now they've got Evander Kane, Adam Henrique, and Warren Fogle in a second line role. And by the way, Adam Henrique
hasn't been so good.
5 points in 17 games, right? So he's been struggling to find his fit. And then their third line as well, Dylan Holloway, who was pretty recently called up from Bakersfield, Ryan McLeod and Corey Perry. Like, you can win those middle six matchups pretty decisively if you're the Canucks, and that's going to be massive heading into the Saturday game as well, if McDavid is indeed out for that one.
Well, this leads me to our next question. Perfect segue here. Matt and Blake are stealing everything from their show. They had a poll question on Sakarison Price. Are the Canucks right now a better team than the Edmonton? It's not right now, but are the Canucks a better team than the Edmonton Oilers? What do you think?
Based on their respective forums, I think Edmonton has the edge right now.
Yeah, I think Edmonton has the average over a lot of teams in the National
Hockey League. Yeah, like right now, they've been the hottest team in the NHL since the coaching change. And the Canucks, yeah, they haven't had Demko lately, but since the All-Star break overall, they've been fine, but they haven't been dummying teams like they did up until the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Right? If we were talking about the version of the Canucks that we'd seen up until the All-Star break, I think we'd be feeling a lot more confident in saying, okay, maybe it is Vancouver, or at least they're parallel. But right now, I think Edmonton has the edge. And look, come playoff time, we know that there's a risk of Stuart Skinner turning into a pumpkin, and does Edmonton secondary scoring dry up? Like, I don't think the Oilers are quite in the same tier as Dallas and Colorado to me. But right now, I do think they're a better team on paper than the Canucks. It's not by a huge difference. And I'll also say this, stylistically, I don't hate the matchup from Vancouver's perspective either, because Edmonton is one of those teams that opens it up a little bit offensively. And that does, I think, lend itself well to Vancouver a little bit, especially when you've got Demko right back there. But yeah, I mean, I think you can't argue with the record that Edmonton has since Knobloch took over.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing, right? And it's the McDavid obviously putting up insane numbers, Leon Draisaitl right there as well. But for me, heading into the playoffs, I think the biggest thing is their depth. Like they can get guys, they can get contributions from their bottom six forwards group, right? And you got guys like Evander Kane who can play down there. And a couple of years ago, he had a monster playoffs, right? That's exactly why they brought him in. And then they signed him to that big contract. For the Canucks, right, the jury's not out because you don't know what you're going to get from this team because there's really hasn't been that experience or we have nothing to look at. So I think that from a fan's perspective, it's an exciting thing. I mean, you had the bubble for some of these guys, but to me, that doesn't count at all. You go into it with these expectations that your team's been so good up until this recent slide of late. I mean, they've lost 5 of 8 games, right? And I think if you look at it, the experience factor is going to be pretty large for this team, you know, as we go into the playoffs.
We saw Edmonton dummy Colorado.
Absolutely.
Like a week ago.
Yep.
Right? Just absolutely dunk on them.
And Vegas.
And Vegas this just week, now, yeah. Right? Like, so.
Without McDavid, yeah.
And yeah, especially without McDavid. So they're feeling it. And the Oilers have always been a team that they get hot in the second half. They play their best hockey in the second half. So that momentum, I think, does matter. Compared to the first few times, the first 3 times the Canucks played them, two of the biggest differences could be, number one, how much have they cleaned up their defensive play, particularly off the rush? Because when the Canucks played them, they were a mess. They were so leaky in odd man scenarios. And then the other thing that I'm looking towards is their top pair, right? Ekholm, Bouchard. In the beginning of the season, Ekholm had a preseason injury. And you could tell, especially in those first 2 games against Vancouver, that he wasn't himself. When he's healthy and playing like he is right now, he can really carry and drive that pair from a two-way perspective. Yeah. And what that does for Evan Bouchard as well, settling him down. Bouchard has significantly cleaned up his defensive play and been far better than he was early in the season. So this is a different team than the one the Canucks played in the first month of the season, for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. I'm sure a lot of eyes will be on that game. Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Game. The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's. But there's no reason you can't have both, because Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Survivor are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you make a few wrong picks, who cares? At least you know, heading into Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon Pull Apart and a small coffee is a great choice. Sign up for Daily Faceoff today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Time now to bring in our guest today on Friday from Ingle Magazine, Mr. Kevin Woodley. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Good, boys. How are you?
Well, doing pretty good here on this Friday as we head into a pretty big matchup against the Edmonton Oilers. And you know exactly where I'm going with this. Thatcher Demko, obviously, all the talk has been about him in these parts as he slowly starts to make his way back into the lineup. Or we don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or next week. But fans are going to look for it for wins and losses. So you obviously know the position very well. When you look at a guy who's taken this much time off, what are you looking for when he gets back in on the action?
Well, I mean, the first thing I've looked for this week, and it's there in spades, is sort of pace and precision of movement. He's flying out there. There are zero limitations to what he is doing physically. And frankly, I don't think there's been any that I saw since Tuesday. You know, dynamic drills, you tend to run through progressions. The goalie coach will work you through sort of movement patterns. Then you add butterfly. Everything's controlled shooting early on. Last step is usually get into post integrations. And then you get into dynamic play where, you know, guys can go wherever they want with rebounds or breakaways. And, you know, again, things that put a goaltender under duress in terms of not knowing where the puck is coming from, where his next push is, that can make him have to go side to side multiple times in short order. And I saw all of that by the time they got through practice yesterday. Wednesday in particular at the morning skate, I stuck around while everybody went into the room and watched him and Ian Clark and Casey DeSmith and the scratches work. And there was just no indication of any physical limitation at this point. Now, the one thing that still has to happen is you got to get out there when the bullets are flying for real, right? And find that little tiny black puck through 10 bodies, half of whom are trying to keep it hidden from you. And that's not easy. There's a certain reliance on rhythm and timing that you can only get from playing games. He thinks 2 games is going to be enough. The target, as Thatcher told us yesterday, was always Tuesday, which is what I was led to believe as well. And my hunch is they stick with it, even though Rick Tocchet said he's ahead of schedule right now. And as I said, the physical limitations, there doesn't appear to be any. But, you know, 2 games, like, if take a look at the preseason, I put it that way, right? Like, this, you're not coming back for the first game of the season. Obviously, the intensity has ramped up by this time of the year. So it's not quite the same as starting a year, but most starting goalies only play two and a half games in the preseason. And then, you know, they drop the puck and they go. And there was no better goalie in the National Hockey League for the first 6 weeks of the regular season than Thatcher Demko. That's where his Vezina case was built primarily. He was the best in the league by a pretty significant, like, he lapped the field for the first 6 weeks. And so that's what you're hoping for, right? Like, that gives you optimism. And as much as he didn't want to discuss it yesterday, the reality is he has done this before. He knows what it's like to come back midseason and work through those progressions and then pop into a game. So, you know, a lot of positive signs for Canucks fans, I think, in what we've seen from Thatcher on the ice, even if you don't see him tomorrow night in Edmonton, which, like I said, my hunch would be you don't. Don't worry if that's the case, outside of what it means maybe to the division title.
What did you see from Shelovs and DeSmith while Demko was out? And do you think goaltending cost the Canucks a few wins over the last few weeks?
I mean, listen, cost the Canucks, statistically, both of them are a little underwater, right? But, like, this is a tough team to play behind right now because they're not giving up much, like, in terms of quantity. And they're still giving up in moments when the mistakes happen. Like, every team does. This isn't a criticism. There's still those quality moments. And one of the hardest things for a goaltender to do is to sit there for lengthy periods of time, you know, watch the other goalie play really well at the other end, and then have an odd man rush or a grade A scoring chance against you, right? Like, it's really not easy to be a goalie behind a team that's only given up 21, 22 a night, and it kills your stats because 3-on-22 is a lot different than 3-on-30. And so I think, you know, they're underwater in terms of the underlying numbers as well, both of them. The 881 for Shelovs, 882 for DeSmith, you know, since the injury, neither one are, you know, that's not great. Cost them games. I mean, are there some games they win with Thatcher Demko in net? You could easily make that argument. I'd even go to the Colorado game, right? Like, the goal with 1.8 or 2.7 seconds left in the second period that sort of got the legs under the Colorado Avalanche, I think Thatcher Demko has a chance to make that save just because he's 4 inches taller and he has that much extra length in his push across. So there are things that he does at such a high level. I don't think it's fair to say, like, to make that comparison, because if these guys were Thatcher Demko, none of this would matter, right? Like, that's just the level Demko lives at. So, yeah, there's been some moments. I think Shelovs at times has been a little aggressive and chased it a little bit. But what I've liked is he reels it in. Casey's clearly fighting the confidence a little bit right now. But he's been so good for them for so long. I'm frankly curious to see which way they go Saturday in Edmonton, assuming it's not Demko.
DeSmith is a UFA at the end of the season. How would you approach the backup situation for next season? Have you seen enough in Shelovs to have some confidence that he could hold the fort down? And there's, of course, the added wrinkle that he is likely exempt from waivers next season, meaning you can kind of shuttle him up and down and get creative in how you fill that backup role for next season.
Well, I mean, you know, I can't remember which, you know, Hall of Fame manager was the first to say this, but I'm fond of the statement that if you have time, use it. And I think that applies to goaltending as well, right? So I think, you know, a lot of times this can end up being a decision made on finances. And if the backup goalie market inflates to the point where it's going to cost them somewhere else on the roster because they can't afford, whether it's a Hronek or Dakota Joshua, or just filling out the rest of the roster with all their UFAs, maybe Artur Shelovs becomes the best option because he's the least expensive and you trust him. You know what you have in him. What I've liked about Shelovs is he's kind of always growing, right? Like, even last year, the first game wasn't great, but by the time he got to the fifth, he looked like an NHL goalie. So that confidence can grow with time. Is his game perfect? No. If it was, we wouldn't be asking any of these questions. Like, there's a development curve here. There's things that he has to learn as he goes. Could he learn them in the American League? He'd probably argue that he's ready to learn them in the National Hockey League. I think that's a fair argument. But there's some, again, you need three. At the end of the day, no matter what, we're seeing it right now. You need three. So is your third your number two in Vancouver? And he's got some NHL experience. You trust him to put him in? Or even, as you said, you know, maybe the idea of flip-flopping them. Ian Clark did that with Jonas Korpisalo when he was in Columbus. The Nashville Predators did it with UC Saros early in his development, where you're with the team all week practicing, but if you don't play a bunch and you know the number one, and in Nashville's case, it was a Pekka Rinne, here it would obviously be a Thatcher Demko. Say Thatcher's playing on Saturday. and Abbotsford's got games Friday and Sunday or Saturday and Sunday. Well, then you call the other guy up, you pluck him on the bench behind Demko, and you let Archers go down and play too until it's his turn to play. But he's still an NHL goalie. He's around the team every day. He's working with Ian Clark. There's lots of different options. And I honestly think like you need to find one you trust to play games in the NHL in all three spots. They have two of them. And where that third one fits in, whether it's primarily AHL or primarily NHL, will probably depend on the price tag.
I'm going to add the Oilers into this because it's a kind of an interesting conversation to have. So, you know, the Canucks have Thatcher Demko. You know, we know obviously the National Predators of UC Saros and what he's been. But between the Oilers, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the LA Kings, which of those teams have the most confidence in their starting netminder?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue against Vegas given their guy won a cup, right? Yeah. But honestly, like, as long as they don't crater in terms of how they play and all of a sudden start bleeding odd man rush chances like they were before they moved on Jay Woodcroft at the start of the season, I think it's fair to argue with Stuart Skinner. Like, he's been that good, and it's really easy. It's not going to show up in the raw numbers, really. Actually, it's not going to show up in any of the numbers until you get rid of everything from October to mid-November. Like, that's how bad it was. They were dead last in the NHL in high danger chances off the rush, and his numbers were terrible. Frankly, they sent down Jack Campbell. His numbers were better than Stuart Skinner's at the time. Since then, they're top two in the NHL in chances off the rush, and Stuart Skinner's performing at a level, whereas if the season did start on November, you'd be making arguments, or November 16th after the coaching change, you'd be making arguments he should be in the Vezina Trophy conversation. He's been that good since the coaching change. Now, obviously, within that, like, what does that tell you? Rush chances, odd man rush chances, high danger chances, those are the toughest ones for any goalie, but his numbers, even after the change, when they do give those up, he's underwater on those numbers. Like, they're not pretty. It's the one sort of remaining weakness in his game. He's not a great skater. He does everything so well in in-zone play, but off the rush, he tends to get caught a little bit. And so, you know, that's the caveat. You continue to play like this, you don't give up those chances. And certainly, I think the Oilers are like the Leafs a few years ago. Everybody used to think of them as this running-gun team. They're not. They're really good defensively, especially they were last year, and they are again this year since the coaching change. We could probably do a whole show trying to figure out why Jay Woodcroft changed the systems in the offseason, because that led to a lot of this, I believe. And Skinner's right in that conversation, guys, like right in that conversation. Since mid-November, his numbers are right up there with Thatcher Demko. As a matter of fact, if you take away Demko's first 6 weeks and Skinner's first 6 weeks, Skinner's been better statistically. So he's probably the one with the most to lose, which probably isn't fair for a guy who's in his second year in the NHL to put all that pressure on him. Because he's just a second-year pro. But that's how good he's been, and that's how heavily they rely on him. Because after that, Picard's been great, but is he a guy you're putting in a playoff situation? I don't know. And Jack Campbell's turned things around in the minors. But again, if you've got to go to him in the playoffs, where's the trust level? I don't have that answer, but I do think there's a ton of trust in Stuart Skinner, who, listen, I'm biased. I've known that kid since working at Hockey Canada POE camp, and his mental approach throughout all this, back when nobody even saw him as a, you know, a high potential guy with mid-round pick kind of expectations. He was at that Hockey Canada camp with really probably no chance of making that World Junior team. And yet look at where he is not that much later. It's a real credit to him and his mindset and his approach throughout in his hometown with a huge family and a lot of extra stuff going on. And also a credit to a guy who gets maligned a lot in that market, Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach, who sort of picked him, was at that camp as well, picked him based, I think, in part on their work together at the camp and the potential he saw, and has helped bring this guy along, I think, at a clip and a rate that far exceeds what anybody would have expected.
You mentioned the mindset thing, and I think it brings to an interesting conversation that we can talk about forever when it comes to the goaltending position, but we know Thatcher Demko. I mean, Arham, you've covered him for a long time as well. I know you have Kevin as well. Ian Clark's the goaltending coach in Vancouver. But I think for me, the mindset is the biggest thing. Thatcher Demko, we know, is a guy of very few words, especially when the microphones are in front of him and things like that. So how do you think he's approaching heading into this? You know, he's had a month off. He's done it before, but this time there's expectation. Like, the team's good. They have a legitimate shot, or at least they believe they do. So where do you think he's at as he heads into the final week of the season here?
Yeah, like, you know, I talked about Skinner's mindset, and it's a growth mindset. Like, even when things were bad, he was always looking for ways to get better. Like, Demko, let's just say, like, he's become a sort of human. I used to say this about Carey Price. They play differently, but they're a human how-to video on the ice, like how to goalie. And for Demko, it's very much Ian Clark's system. Like, if you want to know what Ian Clark's system is all about, watch Thatcher Demko play goal. It's a how-to video. There are other people around the league, the way he moves in and out of his posts. Like, there are other goalie coaches and goalies around the league that marvel at. I've talked to other NHL goalies that are like, man, you got video you can share of Demko working in practice because this is great. The other, so I don't worry about that. But the other thing I don't worry about is his mindset. Mm-hmm. We had a really good chat after that scrum session yesterday, and he's so competitive. Like, coming back off this injury, guys, like, this wasn't, I know the Canucks made it seem like this was always going to be the case in terms of him being ready for the playoffs, but the timeline on this injury wasn't the case. Like, he's way ahead. Mm-hmm. When he talked about that extra work and the determination that he put in to get back here, it's legit. I love that he thanked everyone else who was involved. Like, he is so determined. He is so focused. I don't worry about the way he approaches the game mentally. Obviously, he's got, you know, I believe, is he a psychology major or minor? But he's got that as part of his schooling. But also, I know he wouldn't give me the name when we talked about it last year, but he's got somebody he works with, like somebody who's just like next level that he works with. And so, yeah, I'm not worried about it. Like, pressure does strange things to people at times, and there's going to be no shortage of it here a week from now for the Vancouver Canucks and their number one goaltender. But it's almost the last thing I worry about with Thatcher Demko. Like, he's so driven. He's so focused. He does all the right things. He's a pro's pro when it comes to goaltending. And for all those reasons, I maybe Canucks Nation is a little stressed. I'm not worried about it. Like, it's impossible to predict anything could happen, but that's the one of the guys I just do not worry. And I think we look at the bubble, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing too, when he came back last year, you know, he was coming back to a new system. All his reads were, so we looked at the numbers after he came back with Talkett. Yeah, this is, the defense was better than it was when he left under Boudreaux. It's kind of hard not to be. But it was all new to him. Where guys go and how you read off that as a goaltender. We do these pro reads videos with NHL goalies, and I did a 45-minute video session with Demko. Shameless plug, it's at ingoalmag.com. If you ever want to sit down and watch video with Thatcher Demko, you can do it through our website. And everything was new to him under Talkett. Like, it's not just what the other team is trying to do and read handedness and where the hips are and what they're showing for a release. Are they shooting or passing? All that. Are they going to, you know, low, high? Do I need to go into my post? All those. Like, it's almost like being an NFL quarterback. I'd argue it's harder. Sorry, Farhan. But the amount of information these guys process in real time is staggering. And a lot of it is reading off where their defensemen are supposed to be and whether they can trust them to be there. And when he came back last year, that was all new, and it all changed while he was out. So this year coming back, and Talkett talked about this yesterday, it's not anymore. Like, this is now stuff that he's familiar with and knows what to expect. So again, I think he'll be even more prepared this time around to sort of hit the ground running, and I'm not worried about it just being two starts. The only thing I worry about it being two starts is if they don't mean anything and they start resting guys and these guys don't play in these two games the way they would normally play.
Yeah.
Cause then how do I build my reads if nobody's doing what they're supposed to do?
Elsewhere in the West, it's been really interesting to track Dallas's goaltending situation because Jake Oettinger for most of the season hasn't played up to his potential. The last nine games, he's won eight of them, .937 save percentage. What have you seen from Oettinger this season? And if he's finding this type of form heading into the playoffs, do you like Dallas as the best team in the West?
I don't know about best team. I mean, certainly, like, they looked great in here. You know, and again, like, the Canucks were right in that game till, you know, a needless penalty in the third period. So even in the losses, I've kind of been like trying to be, you know, get off the bridge, voice of reason. Like, they've been in all these games, even during the quote unquote slump. If Oettinger's on, like, they're a contender, right? They've already, we know how deep they are. I think when they were in here, it was eight 20-goal scorers with Ben soon to become their ninth, which is a franchise record for the Stars. We know how good they are on the back end. You know, they rely less on Ryan Suter back there, which is a positive as well. Like, they're not taxing him the way they used to be. And so the only question was Jake Oettinger, who, you're right, when he came into Vancouver, I think he's running an 896 at that point. Now he's won what, like eight of nine or eight in a row or nine in a row. Like, he's on an absolute heater. You always knew he was capable of it. There's enough of a resume there. We know what the pedigree is. Why it wasn't happening, I had a brief conversation with him after. And this is the one thing about goaltending. It's kind of, Irf, you can relate to this. I know you golf. You can't try harder. You might. Like, I could see you as a first tee guy just going out there and swinging out of your ass, but it usually doesn't work very well, does it?
Nope.
Puck's got to come to you as a goalie, man. You can't force it. It's one of the hardest things to do, and Jake kind of admitted to me after the game here in Vancouver that he'd gotten to that point where he was thinking about the whole season and how it hadn't been what's expected of him, what he expects of himself, and so you try and fix it every time. So you're trying to go out there and basically – erase an entire season when the only thing you can do as a goaltender is focus on the next shot, the next play, the next pass, maintain on top of that sequence. If you start thinking big picture out there, you're dead. And he did. So he's playing a little deeper. He's letting the game come to him. He's not forcing anything. And it sounds silly, but it's just like, talk to goalies, whether they're Hall of Famers. Henrik Lundqvist used to call it relaxed intensity. He really struggled with it at times in his career. You want it so bad. And you have to battle. It's part of the job. But it's such a fine line between battling and sort of overdoing it and not letting the puck come to you. And Jake found himself on the wrong side of that equation with a few technical tweaks, positional, tactical, and sort of mindset switches. He looks like the old Jake Oettinger, and that should be scary for the rest of the Western Conference because he has the ability to be that good, as we saw in that Calgary series.
Kevin Woodley, call sign Maverick. Don't think, just do. Thank you very much for this. We appreciate your insight as always. One of the best. Thank you. Yep.
The line, Irf, is actually, if you think out there, you're dead.
Yeah, that is true.
That's the actual line. And just so you know, I've actually used that with NHL goalies as a reference point. Roberto Luongo looked at me like I had three heads because he hadn't seen Top Gun. So I'm very grateful that there was a second Top Gun. So the next generation now knows exactly what I'm talking about when I use the line.
You're the best, Kevin. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Harm, it's awesome because I always love talking to Kevin Woodley, even when we're at games or practices and stuff, just picking his brain about goaltending. So much fascinating stuff in there just from the mind of the goaltenders and thing. The biggest thing for me that stuck out is that Demko is well ahead of where his injury timeline was.
Yeah, that was interesting to sort of hear. And it's one of those things that the Canucks had sort of kept it vague and obviously didn't want to alarm the public. So we didn't really know
what
the injury itself, what the timeline could have been, really how much risk there was of him being ready for the playoffs or not. So that was definitely interesting. And the second biggest takeaway is just when you have somebody like Kevin Woodley, for him to have this level of confidence and not be worried about Demko and his potential return and him getting dialed in, that's reassuring if you're a Canucks fan to hear. Not to mention, I thought it was really illuminating him pointing out how when Demko came back from injury last season, how the system was different, all of his reads were different, and then he sort of explains how many components there are for a goaltender that you're trying to read in real time. And so if Demko was successful returning in that type of environment, and of course the stakes weren't as high as they are now, but still, it gives you some level of confidence that this is a goaltender who also has the right mindset for a situation like this. So that's great to hear from Woodley.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we talk so much and a lot of people harp on this. Mark Elliott Friedman was on here talking about how Vancouver's got the worst media market and things like that and the fans and of that nature. But if there's anyone, you know, we've covered a lot of goalies and stuff around the National Hockey League and they're different cats, right? They're just different people. Kevin obviously can allude to that as well. But Thatcher Demko, a man, like I mentioned, of very few words when the microphone's in front of him, but very cerebral, like thinks the game a different way, a big thinker. You mentioned, you heard that Woodley said that, you know, he's working with someone on the mind, the mindfulness of being a professional and things like that. So I agree. I don't, you know, I'm not worried about Thatcher Demko at all, because when he is playing at his best, he is a Vezina candidate goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks. It's just the time away from the rink. I think in the time away from not playing and not getting your body ready to ultimately jumping into two, what could be meaningless games for the Canucks, and then right into game one, a home playoff game that you haven't had since 2015.
Yeah, it's also not just about Demko specifically, but heading into the playoffs. You think about last postseason, how many matchups there were where there was a big game, big name goaltender.
Yeah.
Against a less established goaltender, and the less established goaltender's team won the series.
Yeah.
Right? Like you think about Toronto versus Tampa, right? You got Vasilevsky versus Samsonov, who Samsonov had never gotten it done in the playoffs. Had a pretty good regular season, but had a poor playoff resume. And I mean, both goaltenders were subpar, but Samsonov outdueled Vasilevsky and Toronto wins that series. You think about Vegas versus Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck was spectacular last season. And at that point, Vegas had Laurent Brossoit in that.
Yeah.
Aiden Hill wasn't even starting at that point.
Wasn't even a thought, yeah.
And Vegas so handily won that series. You think about New Jersey versus New York in the playoffs. Igor Shesterkin versus Vitek Vanacek, who, like, he's not
worthy
even on,
now. Yeah, exactly.
Right? And New Jersey found a way to pull through in that one, right? So I wonder if part of that is, of course, the workload. And that's one of the other, I don't know if we want to call it a silver lining necessarily, because the guy got hurt, but Demko's at a point now where he's well below 60 games played. So from a workload perspective, if he can get into these next couple of regular season games and he feels dialed in heading into playoffs, there's also that bonus of, well, he's fresh and he hasn't been overworked, especially in this last month going into the postseason, which when you look at how goalie usage has gone down for starters and how many teams are cognizant of, well, we don't want guys getting to 60 plus starts. I think that could perhaps be a blessing in disguise for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, Harm, the playoffs are near. We have an Army Nation gear up, or an Army Nation gear up for you for Vancouver's playoff run. You can rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff team and more at nationgear.ca. Some pretty cool gear there, as you can see. I think that's what Quads is wearing at home right now, because he's not at work today. So people will be wrapping it. It'll be a good time here in Vancouver. It is game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs here in Vancouver, you know, is probably a little bit over a couple weeks away, or under a couple weeks away, which is a very exciting time. I mentioned the goaltenders, and we talked to Kevin Woodley about who he trusts most. I didn't get to ask him about who his Vezina candidates were, but, you know, obviously we can't throw Demko kind of into that mix because he's missed so much time. But who do you like for the Vezina?
I think it's Hellebuck.
Yeah.
It's got to be at this point how impactful he's been for them. Don't forget that Winnipeg had a stretch in the middle of the season where they went 34 games where they didn't surrender more than three goals, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was nuts. Like, they, like, every game was just two goals against, one goal against, two goals against, a shutout mixed in here. And of course, Winnipeg in that stretch defended pretty well, but let's be honest, it's not like they've got an all-star blue line. It was mostly predicated and built on the back of Hellebuck's dominance.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably it. I think he's the runaway guy for it, but it would have been interesting if Demko, you know, had been healthy all season, kind of which way the voters would have swayed in that sense. I mean, look, there's another vote that's happening right now, or will be happening at the end of the season, and that's for the Norris Trophy. Right. And it's going to be close. I mean, I think that you and I both can agree on who we think should win it. And that's Quinn Hughes. I think, and from a standpoint of people watching this and people out there, like, there will be people that don't vote Quinn Hughes second. And there will probably be people that might not have him on third on their ballots. Remember when ESPN did their feature and there was one GM that didn't have Quinn Hughes in his top 10. I remember that because it was wild. I think they pulled, I think we shouldn't see the article.
This season?
This season. He wasn't in the top 10 of that. And I can't remember where it was or how long ago. I'll find it. I'll tweet it out. But yeah, they didn't have Quinn Hughes in his top 10 NHL defensemen. But what do you make of the Norris race and how close is it? Or is it actually a lot closer than we think?
Well, first of all, if an NHL GM this season didn't have Quinn Hughes on his list of top 10 defensemen, like he should be immediately fired.
Yeah.
But no, in all seriousness, I mean, we've spoken about this at length the last week or so. I really do think Hughes will come through, not just because he should, but when you hear the likes of Craig Button and Elliot Friedman recently come out and say they're leaning towards Quinn Hughes, number one, and even Frank Saravalli, I know he hasn't definitively said that he's going Hughes for sure. But when we had him on the program a couple of days ago, he said that as he was digesting more information that he was leaning towards Quinn. I think those are positive signs. It's not as if I've seen a lot of people come out there and say, oh, I'm voting Cale Makar number one on my ballot. I'd be shocked if Quinn Hughes doesn't end up winning the Norris Trophy.
Yeah, it would be shocking to me, but it's one of those things where, you know, you look at it and you say it's a kind of a subjective kind of thing, but it's absolutely absurd. Like to not have Quinn Hughes in that range. I mean, I think the article was 10 players or so, 10 NHL players surveyed, 6 from the Eastern Conference, 4 from the Western Conference. And some of the people range from hockey departments, including 3 coaches and 3 general managers that didn't have Quinn Hughes in their top 10, which is absolutely absurd, to be completely honest. There are numbers that do suggest that Quinn Hughes, why he should be running away with it. I think Mike Kelly, who does some work for NHL Network, he tweeted out a stat about offensive zone ice time. And Quinn Hughes is absolutely smoking Cale Makar in that. It's not even close. I think it's like 10 or 15 minutes more. So just more, you know, gasoline to throw on the fire. So why we think that Quinn Hughes should win this trophy.
Well, here's the thing with the Norris race. It's only close superficially, right? Yeah. It's only close if you just look at the point totals. The more research you put into it, the more you try and get into the weeds about defensive zone impact, 5-on-5 results, the context of, oh, Makar has McKinnon to play with. Not only, like, here's something that's really interesting. Makar, nearly 70% of his 5-on-5 minutes are with McKinnon, whereas you look at Hughes, I think he's under 40% in terms of his 5-on-5 time on ice percentage shared with Vancouver's top forward this year, JT Miller, right? Mm-hmm. And Makar, as we've mentioned before, his 5-on-5 results have fallen off a cliff away from McKinnon. So it's like, the deeper you research the Norris, the more work you actually put in, the more signals that you see pointing in Hughes' favor. So that's why I really do believe this is his year. And
So the NHL, okay, I found the article. February 16, 2023. Top 10 NHL defenseman of 2023, okay? I have to get through this because it's bugging me. Cale Makar, Adam Fox, Victor Hedman, Roman Josi, Charlie McAvoy, Erik Karlsson, Miro Heiskanen, Rasmus Dahlin, Jacob Slavin, and Dougie Hamilton were your top 10.
This
is
2023,
February 2023.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing that last season and thinking it was ridiculous. I mean, he wasn't even among the honorable mentions.
Wasn't even among the honorable mentions on that.
Right.
Like, but still, so executives and players still didn't think he was that good. So put some down respect on Quinn Hughes' names, because if you didn't know, now you're going to know. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
I guess we should move to anyone else now. Absolutely. I think it's time for anyone else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listeners' chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listeners' chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change, terms apply. Folks, use Double Dash, multiple restaurants, one delivery fee. It's clutch.
That read was clutch.
It's been a while, right?
I've been tuning in a few times and Quads has kind of just been taken over.
Yeah, so I had some time to mentally prepare for it.
you knew this morning when you got the phone call that I was listening, you might have to do a read.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't skip a beat on that.
You and Thatcher Demko mentally prepared for, you know, coming in and being able to do a read. It's great.
Yeah, it's clearly the same thing too, right? Same level of difficulty doing a 30-second ad read versus
stopping pucks in the NHL
playoffs. Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, you can lead us off. I think there's too much right now, but I just think that when you look at it from the Canucks standpoint, I'm going to go back to that Mike Kelly tweet about, you know, Quinn Hughes versus the rest of the competition. His season, not only has it been historic on the franchise level, it's been historic at the NHL level, it's been historic at the USA hockey level. It's just been an unbelievable season, and still there are people out there that don't think that he should be worthy of a Norris Trophy, or still people that kind of look down on his game a little bit. Why do you think? Because is it because of the way he plays, or is it because of the team that he plays for?
Well, up until this season, a big part of it was, like, I remember last year diving into Hughes' performance, and even at that point, he was playing at a borderline top five defenseman level. I mean, even the results, you would look at Quinn Hughes at 5-on-5, the Canucks dummied teams like they were the team they are right now. Like, the whether it was shots, chances, and most importantly, goal differential, they controlled play like a bona fide contender. And then Quinn Hughes, you look at the team's minutes without him on the ice, and they played like a team that should have been in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, right? But the thing is, unless you watch Vancouver on a night-to-night basis, or unless you actually dive into those numbers, you're not going to have that understanding or context that the divide is so extreme for this team. You're going to just lump Hughes in with the team struggles, particularly defensively, because he's on the smaller side. I don't think the improvements he made defensively got enough respect around the league. Whereas now you have the team narrative working in your favor. I think that's essential.
Wasn't he pissed? Someone asked him, I think it was last season, about his defensive game, and he's like, well, people don't watch.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and he's right.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially being out West Coast. Yeah. How many people in the East are...
I tweet it all the time. I say it all the time, yeah.
Like, even players, like, you only play against...
half the league.
Yeah.
That watches games.
Yeah, and...
In your time zone. Okay, well, I guess, yeah.
And from a player's perspective, right, you're only playing... You might only play Quinn Hughes twice a year.
Yep.
So it's not enough to be like, oh man, this guy's got a commanding two-way presence and he's dialed in defensively. It takes time for narratives and for reputations to change for people that don't pay attention to a particular market or a particular player with a magnifying glass that we do. So it's kind of like Vancouver internally as a market, we've been ahead of the trend. And yeah, again, I can't emphasize this enough. I do think the team being successful has been essential. Put it this way. If Quinn Hughes is having the season, but the Canucks are on the outside looking in on a playoff spot, that would be the scenario.
There you go.
Where we'd be banging on the table and saying Quinn Hughes deserves the Norris, but
everyone else
would be like, it'd be a much tighter race in that scenario.
Karen, is home ice advantage in the playoffs overrated?
It's a really good question. I mean, it matters, but it's negligible. I shouldn't say it makes a difference. You want to have it. You want, especially if you're a team that has success on home ice.
Yeah.
And
if you're Vegas,
like, think about the intimidation factor sometimes, right? 2011 Cup final, the Canucks going into Boston. Like, even from a fan's perspective at the time, there was something about going into TD Garden and just knowing that Boston had Vancouver's number in TD Garden, right? There's always been some buildings where you go into and it's a scary atmosphere to play in. So, especially for teams that are already formidable, like if you end up in a playoff series with Colorado, it's going to feel different going into Ball Arena, where Colorado is nearly unbeatable on home ice, especially with the altitude, compared to if you're in a situation where you have where you have home ice as the Canucks. And of course, you're not going to run into Colorado until the conference final if you get there. But it matters. But we've seen plenty of examples of teams having home ice advantage and it not mattering too. So
Jesse asks, now that Lane Hutson has officially signed a pro deal, what should the realistic expectations be for Willander workload and deployment for next year?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. I've been watching a lot of Boston University tape recently because I'm working on a Macklin Celebrini piece. And of course,
nice. From here.
Yeah. And of course, as a result, I've gotten a chance to see a fair bit of Willander. I am curious to see how much of an offensive role that he is going to take. Like, is he immediately going to be tapped on the back to take over the reins on the first unit power play? Because, I mean, there's no doubt that Lane Hutson on that BU team is the go-to option, and the chemistry that he and Celebrini have together, the level of offensive involvement, like that's going to be a huge loss for BU's blue line. And put it this way, I think the opportunity is going to be there. It's going to be on Willander though, to show that he has a dynamic enough skill set to step into a much bigger offensive role specifically, because watching Willander this year, he's been reliable defensively. He doesn't look out of place by any stretch of the imagination. He's playing a significant role, but he's not driving offense, right? And especially in the offensive zone, there is a lot of room for his puck skills to improve. He doesn't look, put it this way, he doesn't yet look like a player that would be comfortable running a first unit power play.
Yeah.
But the opportunity is
good. They don't need him to.
Yet.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And that's where, of course, going from your freshman season to your sophomore, players over the summer can take a huge step.
Yep.
And if you're Willander, like the biggest emphasis and priority from a developmental standpoint should be working on his puck skills, because again, his skating is phenomenal.
Yeah.
His defensive positioning is reliable. I trust him in his own zone. It's just, there are situations where he gets a puck at the offensive blue line and he doesn't always look comfortable in making that next play and walking the line or having the vision to spot a teammate. And if he works on those puck skills, the opportunity is going to be there. So look, 5-on-5, he's going to take on a much bigger role. It'll be fascinating to see if his skill set can improve enough to the point where I imagine he's going to get a look first unit power play wise next season for BU, but for him to actually take the bull by the horns and excel in that role, we need to see some improvement in his puck skills, I think.
Karen's all over you. Harm, you should look at the D-zone faceoff or D-zone percentage, all O-zone percentage versus D-zone start percentage and O-zone start percentage for Makar and Hughes. Hughes starts more in the more than that D-zone, less in the offensive zone, and plays a higher percentage of his game in the offensive zone. It's not even close. We're not going to keep getting into this Hughes versus Makar thing because we can spend hours on it, but we appreciate the feedback. I've got one for you before we finish up on this. Anyone else in the running for coach of the year than Talkett?
So it's funny. I thought John Tortorella sneakily deserved a little bit of credit when Philadelphia was in the thick of the playoff race. And of course, they've completely fallen off. So he's not on the radar there. I mean,
like, you going to give Knobloch any love?
I mean,
because he took over early.
Sure. He deserves some credit. But the thing to keep in mind is the Oilers were a trendy pick for a lot of people as cup favorites.
Yep, that's fair.
Before
he inherited a team that was going to be good no matter what.
Exactly.
At some point, you just had to figure it out.
Exactly. Beyond that, I mean,
Bonus?
Sure. Sure, they've been decent. Peter Laviolette, maybe, in New York. Although, that's a team as well that is only a couple of years removed from an Eastern Conference final run.
If Washington makes the playoffs, Carberry.
He deserves some love.
Because that team was bad.
Yeah,
like, they're not good. That's not a good hockey team. And if they can kind of figure it out there, I think that would be the interesting one. Paul Maurice gets so much love all the time, but, like, I mean, he deserves to be there as well. But no,
I don't think so. The Panthers are, like,
Panthers were a cup favorite too.
In 2021, I think it was the 56 game season, they were already President's Trophy, right?
Yeah.
So it's like they've been a wagon for a long time.
Yeah.
What about Jim Hiller in LA? Same thing. Comes in midseason.
Yeah.
I don't know if he turned their season around, and I'm not saying, like, yeah, absolutely should be one of the top candidates, but, you know, when a team is able to find its game like that with a new coach, definitely should be given a little recognition.
You're scaring people with that because Daryl Sutter took over and they won the cup.
Oh.
You're scaring people with that, Grady.
The 1-3-1, baby.
I think the overall point is just it's Talkett and then everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
We're all having to stretch to make these arguments for these coaches.
It's Rick's just Rick's trophy to lose. I mean, look, he was the coach of the All-Star game. He coached the team to an insane record, in the conversation for the President's Trophy at some point. At one point in this season, the top three point getters in the NHL were all Vancouver Canucks. That was after the Islanders game when they won 4-3 in overtime. All three point getters in the NHL with the Vancouver Canucks. So Rick Tocchet obviously definitely deserves some credit there. Brewed in memory of former owner Greg Mills. Greg is a solid West Coast IPA with notes of citrus, pine, and solid malt backbone. As West Coast as an IPA gets, Greg can be found at most liquor stores across BC. If you don't see it at your local bottle shop, ask them to bring it in or order it for home delivery through the Four Winds online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Harm, I leave us with this. We're a few minutes away. What are you looking forward to most in the matchup against the Edmonton Oilers tomorrow night?
I just feel like it's going to be a game with a lot of pace, right? Yeah. A lot of times when it's been against LA, for example, it's been, sure, it's a matchup of two pretty good Western Conference teams, but there isn't that, that pace and skill level. LA slows the game down to such a standstill, whereas the Oilers, yeah, they've cleaned things up defensively since Knobloch took over, but they're still a team that likes to open things up. They're fun, right? They're fun to watch, yeah. Right? So it's not just, hey, it's a marquee matchup with a lot of stakes on the line. It's also, it should be a pretty entertaining brand of hockey. And also, to see the impact that JT Miller had in all three of those Edmonton games, not only from an offensive perspective, but shutting down Edmonton's top guns, you know that he's going to be getting up with some extra oomph for that matchup. And it's always fun to watch JT when he's in that mode this season of not just, hey, I'm driving offense, but I'm an all-around workhorse and I'm bullying guys physically and I'm winning my defensive matchups. So I'm also excited to see how JT performs. By the way, I have to transition a little bit. I have to ask you, how have you found the rink-wide transition to live stream? Because I saw it a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And with the video and everything, looked super sharp.
It was fun. I mean, look, I think that, Jeff Patterson is a guy that's covered this team for a very, very long time. I've known Jeff. A lot of people that watch our shows, and if you follow Vancouver hockey, you know exactly who Jeff Patterson is. So it's fun. I mean, it's great. And I think it's another way for people to interact with the post-game show that's live. We're up right away after the games. Me and Jeff all play off long. Farhan and Jeff tomorrow night after the Edmonton game. But yeah, it's totally been fun. It's been great, and I look forward to the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, it was funny. I think seeing the first live stream, it got like 13 or 14,000 viewers on Twitter.
Yeah,
big numbers.
And you have to remember, it was on the heels of that loss to LA, It like a horrible game.
Awful.
So to put up those types of numbers,
misery loves company, right? When the Canucks lose, people love to talk about them.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to engage. But Grady, what are you looking forward to most tomorrow?
Yeah, I think similar to Harm, just the overall pace of the game. Yeah. But I want to see how they can shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. They did a pretty good job in those first few games. But now, this is without a doubt a different Oilers team. And I don't know if the Canucks can go toe-to-toe playing that type of style necessarily. But they can, find that defensive structure and have their forwards kind of back pressuring and take over that slot and just really shut down. And we've seen, how good the Oilers are, those cross crease passes, like those backdoor plays to Draisaitl. Like, can they get their stick, in those lanes? The goal that the Coyotes scored the other night went right through Ian Cole, the tap in goal from Gunther to Cooley there. So yeah, I think that's going to be the main thing that I'll be watching, is how much can they truly limit the top guns of the Oilers. And maybe this game gets a little nasty too with Kane and Perry on the other side. Is who's gonna step up? Because when you think back to those first few games, Zadorov wasn't in the lineup. I don't think Susie played, maybe he played one of the games, so could get a little nasty here. And another type of playoff primer, as I like to call it, big boy hockey. So who's gonna step up?
Thanks, Grady. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me, guys. It's going to be a fun one. It's Vancouver and it's Edmonton. It's on a Saturday night. Just three games left for the Vancouver Canucks before the playoffs begin here in Vancouver in short order. So looking forward to it. Harm, thanks for having me. You guys will be back on Monday after Quadrelli finishes his load management.
We will not be putting him on LTIR.
No, we will not be putting him on LTIR. But nevertheless, this was Canucks Conversation for Friday.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.